Call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, very good Wednesday morning to you. Happy Valentine's Day to those who celebrate it. We are continuing our thoughts on Super Bowl 58, and not only that, but looking ahead to 2024 in this NFL season, as teams will now go into the process of figuring out the draft, the offseason, and how they can get better, and that includes the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs are going to attempt to do something no one has ever done in NFL history. Only a few teams have had an opportunity to do in NFL history, and that is win three straight Super Bowls. Only a handful of teams have ever gone into the next season with a chance, knowing that they could be the first three-peat champion in NFL history. The Cowboys, the Steelers, the Patriots, etc. The Green Bay Packers in the very beginning, the Miami Dolphins early in the Super Bowl era. But it's never been done. It's never been done. And the Chiefs will know that they have to get better as some of the things that worked for them are not guaranteed to work for them down the road. Continuing a dynasty is really difficult. That's one of the reasons why we define dynasties in the NFL in a short burst of time. When you've dialed in the right coach and quarterback and skill players and everything is working for you salary cap wise and everything is working for you in terms of your roster personnel that you know you can't keep forever, that's where we get the dynasties. That's where you get the Steelers with four Super Bowls in 6 years. That's where you get the Cowboys, 3-4. Maybe the Niners, but that roster had evolved and changed, is probably an exception of that rule because their dominance was really over a decade and not a short burst. And the Patriots had sort of two mini dynasties. They had one where they won three Super Bowls in 4 years, and then the latter part of the Tom Brady era was them winning Super Bowls over the Seahawks and the Falcons and the Rams, three Super Bowls in a kind of a 5 year period or 6 year period. But that being said, this is where the Chiefs are right now. They have to figure out, how do we continue this with some question marks that are going to be problematic for them this offseason, which is, are they really going to try to win three Super Bowls with the wide receivers that are in that room? And the answer to that is no. And it's good for Brett Veach because he's been able to manage this roster and dead cap space relatively reasonable. They're going to be middle of the pack when it comes time to spend money. They've got to shore up Chris Jones, and then they've got to look at the free agency of wide receivers that will be coming to them. And that T. Higgins is on the board. Michael Pittman is on the board. There's a couple of others that I think would be very interested in. But there's no question that the wide receiver problem that Kansas City overcame to win a Super Bowl is not something you want to bring into the 2024 season. There's no reason to roll the dice, to no pun intended, given the Super Bowl was in Vegas, to try to see if that would work again. Because this league is not one to play around. There are going to be general managers and head coaches and vice presidents of personnel and president of football operations entirely geared towards figuring out how to win in the AFC. Because the AFC is still extremely talented with quarterbacks. And those teams are going to try to get better, and the Chiefs are going to try to get better. You can look at the New England Patriots as a perfect example of this, right? You go into the early days of the Patriots. You can go into a time when they were just starting to win Super Bowls. And you would see there, of course, was Tom Brady, but he was throwing to Deion Branch. He was throwing to David Givens, right? He was throwing to Lawrence Maroney right out of the backfield, or handing the ball off to Lawrence from Maroney. But then they started to get Wes Welker more involved. They got a Julian Edelman. They got a Rob Gronkowski, right? They got a Jacoby Myers late. There were players on those teams that were, as they continued to add around Belichick and Brady, that continued their dominance. Not even a period of time when they weren't going to Super Bowls, they were still one of the feared teams in the AFC. So being a dynasty in the NFL, or at least a long-term dynasty in the NFL, means that you've got to do it basically with one individual on the field, and that is the quarterback. But then you're going to have to figure out a way to replace people that gave you success. Tyreek Hill helped this Chiefs team win their first Super Bowl, but he was not there for the last two. So now you've got a wide receiver core of Mecole Hardman and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Kadarius Toney, who didn't even play in the Super Bowl, and you're going to have to find better wide receivers. But there's also a question that I have for Kansas City that didn't have to come up in the Belichick-Brady era. The Belichick-Brady era is defined that way because those two were the connecting dots to Super Bowl greatness, to AFC greatness, all of the AFC championship games that they appeared in. Yeah, the names were going to change, right? I mean, you get from Wes Welker to Julian Edelman to Rob Gronkowski as leading receivers for the teams those seasons. In Kansas City, there's going to be some questions in the next couple of years. How old is Travis Kelce in terms of football age? He's 35 in regular age, but how old is he in football age? Is he closer to 40? I mean, he's a tight end in this league. He's one of the most effective tight ends in this league. He's getting beat up. He's getting hit. He's getting into that, you know, that car crash every time he gets tackled. He said, you know, look, I'm closer to the end than I am at the beginning. Well, yeah, because you're in your mid-30s. How long are you going to continue to play? And I think the other question is Andy Reid. This is not a question we kept bringing up with Bill Belichick, which is, after winning the Super Bowls, are you going to come back? Are you going to come back? Are you going to come back? Andy Reid is getting those questions now. Now, again, if you have Patrick Mahomes, you have a big chunk of why you can continue to be successful. But the reality of it is that Andy Reid and his play calling is one of the reasons Patrick Mahomes can be successful. His natural talent, his smarts for the game, all of that clearly play a larger role. But don't discount Andy Reid's influence, his ability to dial up the right plays, the ability to protect him. One of the things that was pointed out was in the post-Super Bowl analysis was once Patrick Mahomes had gotten a concussion a couple of years ago in a playoff game against Cleveland, they don't do fourth down and short with Patrick Mahomes. They don't do quarterback sneaks like Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts. They don't do those kinds of things. They use his legs, but they don't use him in that kind of way, right? And when Patrick Mahomes had gotten injured, that Andy Reid has been very careful on how he has designed Patrick Mahomes to run the football. So again, this is a Chiefs team that's a little different in how it is going to try to achieve success even further than they've already gotten, right? Four Super Bowl appearances, three championships, right? The AFC championship game over the past 6 years has run through them. If they're going to want to keep it, they're going to have to find answers to some tough questions. Does Andy Reid stay on for another 5 years? Does Travis Kelce play two or three more years? And then what do they do then? Who becomes the security blanket? How do they utilize the money that they have in cap room? Are they going to be able to re-sign Chris Jones and keep him? You want to give Steve Spagnuolo all the tools he's going to need, because let's be really clear. As great as Mahomes has been in this postseason run, this was a defensive-led Super Bowl team. This is the defense that helped them get into a position where they didn't have to offensively explode against anybody. And they didn't. But I wouldn't, as much as we always kind of say, I will never bet against Patrick Mahomes. And I'll be honest, it's a lesson I had to learn, because I picked Buffalo, I picked Baltimore, and I picked San Francisco. But I watched Patrick Mahomes do every single thing in that game to say, not today. On the road, neutral site Super Bowl against a team with so many weapons. That was Patrick Mahomes this year. But I wouldn't want to take that receiving core again through another 17-game season to see where you would dial it up. I know the other teams are not going to be in a position to just bow down because Patrick Mahomes is playing quarterback. There are going to be teams that are analyzing what they did wrong. I'll tell you this right now. I think the Bills are cooked when they play Kansas City. I think they have suffered too many unbelievably emotional losses to be competitive. But I think if you're the Ravens, you go, how many mistakes did we make in that game? And if you're San Francisco, it's the same question. I really thought San Francisco was going to pull this out. And again, call me crazy for betting against Mahomes, but that's all hindsight. In the game, I thought San Francisco had played better, and I thought in the end they were going to figure out a way to win. I hated them taking the ball to start overtime. I hated it. But at the same time, I kind of thought once they got Christian McCaffrey moving after the penalty, the holding penalty on defense that allowed him to get a first down when it was a third down incompletion, and then you started seeing McCaffrey getting some passes, catching runs, moving the chains, etc. I thought, oh, they may score here. And that puts, you know, Kansas City obviously in a position to have to answer with a touchdown. But when they kicked the field goal and the Chiefs had the ball, that's when those feelings kind of went away. But again, would I bet on Kansas City with this same exact team? No, it has to be better. It has to be better wide receiver-wise. And everything that Patrick Mahomes did for his wide receivers this year, like continue to believe in them, continue to support them. But you could tell that he was very angry at a couple of things. He was very upset at a couple of things. He threw his helmet this year in the Super Bowl. Again, when Marquez Valdes-Scantling went backwards, he had that look of like, what are we doing? Right? Tyreek Hill wouldn't have done this. That kind of thing. But if you are talking about the Chiefs becoming New England, it's a large task because New England put in players that Brady made better. You know, I talked about it many weeks ago at one point during the season. And a lot of it was in the criticism of the coaches saying that Tom Brady's ability to play quarterback well enhanced the careers of every single coach on that coaching staff that got NFL head coaching jobs that couldn't do anything with them. But he also did it with players. There are plenty of players who came into New England, left New England for better opportunities and more money, and then just disappeared. Brady's ability to utilize you in the way that enhanced you and your ability is something I want to see Patrick Mahomes do. But we didn't have to see Brady do that early because you get what you get. It's when you start getting older, when you get to be 32, 35, 37, 41, 43, when you go to Tampa Bay and you're on a brand new team. It's when you start doing those things that really start to enhance your legacy. Now, Mahomes hasn't had to do that, really, other than losing Tyreek Hill and winning Super Bowls with wide receivers that led the league this year in dropped passes and had huge mistakes on the biggest stage, like the game against Buffalo when Kadarius Toney lined up offsides, which inevitably meant they had to go to Buffalo to play the Bills. But these are the things that good quarterbacks overcome, and Patrick Mahomes at least is in the right step to do it.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We continue. Happy Valentine's Day. Little rock love songs for you. If you celebrate Valentine's Day, some of you don't. That's fine. Some of you don't have anyone to celebrate with. Some of you just don't, even if you have somebody to celebrate
with. The religious thing? You don't celebrate Valentine's Day?
Here's the deal. I know, like, obviously I know Christmas, Easter, you know, even St. Patrick's Day. I kind of know who St. Patrick is. I know St. Valentine's. Yeah.
He really is.
He really is. I think it was like he – what did St. Patrick do? Did he
– He drove snakes out of Ireland.
Ireland. Drove snakes out of Ireland. That's right.
But he's English man.
Now, St. Valentine is – he was like a Christian martyr. And something like that. He got killed and something about his heart. I don't know.
And somehow we equate that to love.
Somehow Hallmark created a whole holiday around getting cards and candy.
Yep.
That's what we do.
That's pretty much it.
Like he's like a martyr. He's like a Christian martyr. Yeah. But we've turned it into a get your chocolates, roses, and cards. So, and that's now Valentine's Day. You know, I was gonna make my wife this morning. I was so excited because I had this idea that I was gonna wake up early, and I was gonna make her her favorite breakfast, which is French toast. And I was gonna make French toast, a little bacon, and give her like a French but. Become my daughter has had to come back from college. She's got something wrong, and so she's got to get another test, neurology test and whatnot. She's got some headaches and stuff like that. So we had to go pick her up last night. So she had to leave really early. So then I said, well, I'll do it Saturday. She goes, you know, she's also getting her wisdom teeth out, and Amberlee's going to be on a liquid diet. And I'm like, so you don't want to eat French toast in front of your daughter who's on a liquid diet this weekend? No. So I'm like, can I just do it next week? Or how about this? I'll do it in June. How about that? Do you have anytime on the calendar you want this Valentine's Day French toast idea?
Why don't you just throw some French toast in a blender and go, here you go.
Yeah, that kind of could do that. That's right. That's right.
That way you guys can partake. You throw some syrup in there. It's going to taste great.
I should have made a Valentine's coupon book.
There you go. Yeah, you should
have. One free hug. One free massage. One free French toast breakfast. And just hand it to her.
One free Tuesday night special.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Wink, wink.
Wink, wink. One free clean out your car and vacuum it. As the one thing I always tease my wife about, she's so neat in the house. Our house is always trying to, she's always trying to clean, keep it organized. Her car is a disaster.
Can she come over?
I'm telling you.
I need some help.
You have kids. You have young kids. Yeah. Our young kids is the same thing. Our house was always disorganized.
There's stuff. There's crap everywhere.
But
all
I'll leave
the time.
Like a plate in the TV room, and she'll come in. She'll grab the plate, shake her head. But then I'll go into her car, and I'm like, "What? How long has this Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup been in there? How long has this been in here?" She's like, "I know." She goes, I run around a lot. Because she has to travel from office to office.
But you know what? The other day I was looking for batteries. Right, and then I came to the conclusion that we were just out of AA batteries. But I didn't realize, I think we have 4 junk drawers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bet you found some there, huh?
No.
Well, you didn't.
We were just out. Kids always taking batteries. Kids take everything. If you have kids, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize we had 4 junk drawers.
Oh, okay.
And I turned to my wife. Like, I was like, all right, I'm not saying right now. To her, you know, I was like, I'm telling her, I'm not right now, but we need to get a control of this because there's 4 drawers of just stuff. What are we holding on? There's like a screw.
Completely agree. I mean, happens all the time.
What am I holding on to this for?
You know how many Allen wrenches I have?
Oh, from of different, course.
I mean, I have 400 of them.
They give those things out like it's, you know, like, yeah. Like it's, you know what, it, you know what the Allen wrench is? The Allen wrench, whenever you buy a tool, like a piece of furniture that you have to put together, because I know that's where you get them from. The Allen wrench is the equivalent of the stick of bubble gum in baseball card packs.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You don't need it. You don't even want it.
You have 100 of them.
And you have 100 of them.
Yep. Exactly.
And there they go. They just sit there in your drawer. And every single time you pull one out, you're like, oh, yep, there it is.
That's kind of crazy. Speaking of Dunkin' Donuts, as I mentioned, my wife's Dunkin' Donuts coffee mug, they have sold out on the tracksuits.
I know.
Have you heard that story?
I didn't even know they were for sale.
I didn't either. And then I wake up this morning, I see the news that in 19 minutes, the tracksuits were sold out. $60 a piece. Their tracksuits were sold out.
Two things, right? One, I mean, you know, you'll wear it just to wear it to be, ironic?
Right.
But two, if that's not the number one Halloween costume.
I was just thinking the same thing. You're right. You are right.
It'll be the number one Halloween costume this year.
That's the Halloween costume. That's right.
So they'll come back around. You'll have another opportunity.
Drop $60 on a Dunkin's tracksuit.
Dunkin's.
That's right. The Boston Massacre.
It's a great band name. I'm sorry. Dunkin's.
Yeah. I know. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, again, they did that. All right. So, again, we're going to head into the next. So the calendar now has flipped. So now we are focused on the draft and off-season moves. That's it. So if your team is lucky enough to be looking at the draft board and seeing yourself in the top 10 like you are or the top 15, yeah, it's time to start analyzing where the future holds. And I think to myself, and I was talking about this earlier, if you're a team in the AFC, right, and you are saying to yourself, okay, look, Kansas City are finding ways to win, and we know they're going to get better. There's no way Brett Veach is sleeping on this wide receiver core. It is time for some teams to start figuring out how you are going to get Kansas City good. And you can't get Kansas City good if you don't have a quarterback. And I start thinking about, for example, the Bills. I'm with you on the Bills. I think the window is just starting to really, really close without ever getting to that top of that mountain that I thought eventually they were going to get. They were really, a couple of years ago in that 13 seconds, I thought, oh my God, they're going to beat Kansas City, and then who knows what's going to happen here. It was a divisional game. It wasn't the championship game yet, but oh my God, they're about ready to knock off the Chiefs in Arrowhead. And
you know
then they
did it. You know what that play quickly might become is like that setback.
Yeah.
That one, like that was the turning point where the Bills were, this was their peak. They couldn't handle their business for 13 seconds. And now ever since then, it's just been a nosedive.
Yep. Then the DeMar Hamlin situation, they didn't play particularly well in the playoffs. That once that occurred, then this year had the home game, but still couldn't get over the top.
And the weather.
Yeah.
And the weather on their side.
Yep. And then staying in that division, Miami. One game may have twisted it a little bit. One game. And that was that game against the Bills. Had they won that game against the Bills at the end of the season, they would have been the 2 seed. which meant they would have gotten Kansas City at home. Now, I don't know if that means anything because Kansas City didn't have any problems at home, but I do know this. The Dolphins wouldn't have played in minus 30-degree weather in Kansas City. The Patriots, they are in complete rebuild, new head coach, rebuild mode. The Jets are interesting to me because they've got one more shot at this. They got one more shot. I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is signing another deal after this one. They got one more year of this to try to get some level of glory out of the signing of Aaron Rodgers. Otherwise, it's going to be a big laughing stock moment for this franchise if Rodgers does play and isn't that good, or he gets hurt again and everybody goes, wow, that was all for nothing. But if you're the Ravens, how do you contemplate this past season where you were the number one seed and lost at home, making some mistakes, where you made real mistakes, right? Zay Flowers in the taunting penalty, Zay Flowers sticking the ball to the goal line and fumbling it, right? All of those things where you said, you know what? We had a number of opportunities to score and we blew it because we made some mistakes. Cincinnati, the slate is clear. There's no other reason to think that the Bengals are going to be awesome next year. I think Joe Burrow is hurt. When he's not hurt, they're fantastic. But they might not have T. Higgins, who's a free agent. Cleveland, well, I'm going to have to wait on them. And if you're Pittsburgh, you have no idea who the quarterback's going to be. You know it's not going to be Mitch Trubisky. But is it going to be Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett? And how exciting is that? You might have a chance to get a Justin Fields if the Bears want to move on from him. You might have a chance to call the Denver Broncos to see what it will take to get Russell Wilson. You may be in a position to draft a QB moving up, maybe getting somebody else that's not named Caleb Williams or Drake May. But if you're the Steelers, the quarterback's a big question. The Texans, just keep building what you're building. The Colts, another season, we'll see if Anthony Richardson can play a full year. Jacksonville's got a lot of questions to ask themselves after a season in which they had promise and then can't seem to close out seasons well enough. And the Tennessee Titans are under a new head coach and they'll figure themselves out. Denver, too many question marks. The Raiders have a very good head coach in Antonio Pierce who the players love. And the Chargers got the very best head coach that was available in Jim Harbaugh. And now let's see if that marriage works. And they're all vying for the crown of the Kansas City Chiefs. Oh, by the way, did you hear what Andy Reid said? I kind of missed this. During the Super Bowl, he said Antonio Pierce. He was talking about Antonio Pierce. He said the Raiders have got themselves a great coach. He goes, they kicked our butts on Christmas Day, and that was our wake up call. And I told them that. I said, you kicked our butts, and that really kicked in something for the Chiefs. He gave high praise to Antonio Pierce. That is the big message that everyone has for this guy, is that the Raiders should have. Thankfully, didn't look elsewhere, didn't get caught up in anybody else's hype. They went right to the guy that was their coach.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, rolling along this morning as we continue. Happy Valentine's Day. Rocking music of love and enjoyment. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. By the way, congratulations to Syracuse last night. Another college basketball upset. Knocked off number 7, North Carolina. After Clemson had beat North Carolina. After Georgia Tech had beat North Carolina.
So, pretenders.
Yeah.
North Carolina.
Armando Bacot said the ACC runs through me. Apparently, it's being run through everybody at this point.
So. Someone stole your credit card, Bacot.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the first win against a top 10 team for Syracuse since they beat Duke in 2019. So God bless them. Speaking of the college game, the college football board of managers are expected to be voting on February 20th, that is next week, on the format for the college football playoff. So this will be 12 teams, but basically how do they want the 12 teams? Do they want the top 12 teams in the polls? Do they want the committee to take the top 12, even if 9 of them belong in the SEC? Or how do they want it incorporated with the conferences? So there's a format called 5+7, which is 5 conference champions. So that would now include like a Sun Belt. That would now include a AAC, like because now we've got 4. And so you got 4 big ones. Mountain West would be involved in that as well. So you'd be taking 5 conference champions and then the 7 ranked teams after them. So the committee would then put out its rankings. Then you would take the conference champions off the board, and then you, whatever you were left over with, the top seven teams from that group. And it seems like a fair way to do this, to make, to really emphasize the conference championship. And it allows that game to have some meaning when it never really did if you were a team that was not going to be heading to the playoff, but you could play spoiler for your conference. That was always the dilemma that the conference championship game presented itself. So if you were a team that was unbeaten or maybe one loss and it was tricky, but you had to win your conference championship game, then you would say, okay, the only obstacle we have is this other opponent. But this other opponent, they want to win because they want the hardware of winning the conference championship. But it could take our one shot of getting into the college football playoff off the board, off the table. So it was always, every now and then, this sort of situation would pop up. And you would go, oh, gosh, I hope the conference isn't left out because of this. And then sometimes they were. Sometimes they were. Well, that will sort of eliminate it. They'd say, you win your conference championship game, you get in. After that, we start looking at the rest of the body of work for people. But it does allow for, again, what we called the group of five, which now I'm not even sure what that name is, if they want to relabel it. But now this would include those other conferences. But here's the trick. And this is something I had to kind of deeply look into. The Pac-12 is still technically alive. It's not really alive, but it's technically alive because Washington State and Oregon State are still kind of hanging around. Now, they're not in a, they just got rid of their commissioner, George Kalikoff. They just got rid of him. There's probably no there when it comes to the Pac-12. But Washington State and Oregon still want a piece of being part of this conference that negotiated this deal prior to their disbandment. So now it's like very tricky on exactly what do you do with Washington State and Oregon State. Are they playing an independent schedule and then they would just meet in Las Vegas for the Pac-2 title? But if they're not ranked, what happens? Where do they go? So in the end, this is going to be a way to sort of have the college football playoff that makes a little bit more sense, but still throws in the element of object or a subjectivity to whatever the committee is, how the committee is ranking. Oh, by the way, they got like $7 billion for the broadcast rights for this thing for a while. College football is doing great. It always has. It always will. Its business model is fantastic. It's something everybody wants a piece of, and they'll pay through the nose to get it. But that's what they're going to vote on. They're going to vote on whether or not they want a 5+7 model or whether or not they just want a 12 model. I go a little back and forth on this. It is amazing to me, and I'm going to tell you this right now. I've said this. This has been my biggest complaint about the powers that be in college football. And I get it. More voices allow for change and a lot more different opinions that weren't in the process 10, 15, 25, 30 years ago are now changing the aspect of where the sport is going. But remember what this big selling point of college football not having a playoff was. Oh, never forget it. Because those of us who screamed that we wanted one were always told we weren't going to get one because the regular season had to have credible value, right? You had to, we college football powers that be used to say all the time, we have the best system in all of sports. You can be an 8 seed and win the national championship in college basketball, or a 10 seed or an 11 seed, whatever it is. The path to that is laid out in front of you. Just do your job, do it right, win your games. It doesn't matter what that number is next to you. In the NBA, NFL, wild card teams win all the time. 7 seeds win, 6 seeds win. Again, it's laid out in front of you. But only college football says the regular season was the best of the best of the best of the best. And the value of the regular season was we just don't let anybody into this thing. Okay. Now we've changed it, right? We changed it to 4 and now 12, where we are saying that, okay, we may not have the best postseason anymore in terms of making sure that the champion of our sport is the very, very best. And now we are a lot like other sports, but now they're saying, but in the end, that's kind of okay. And we have said for years and decades that it was kind of okay. We've told them, you know what? We don't care that the team with the best NBA record doesn't win the NBA championship. We're okay with the not with the Final Four not containing the four number one seeds in each region. We're totally cool with that. In fact, we kind of like it when it doesn't happen that way. And by the way, when it comes to Major League Baseball or the NFL, we get that the closeness of these teams in terms of excellence makes it so that their seeding really is kind of irrelevant in the first place. Right? And in the NFL, everyone beats everybody anyway. So even if you are a number one seed like the Baltimore Ravens, that a five seed could beat you or a four seed could beat you, and we don't even blink an eye. But when it comes to college football, what you kept presenting us over and over again was just a major excuse until you dialed it in right the way you wanted your postseason to be in terms of value and monetary value of the monetary units that were coming your way. Not value of determining a champion, value on who was going to pay for it, how it was going to look, and how it was going to be incorporated into the very lucrative bowl system that you had been sort of cashing in on for years and years and years. Until you figured that out, there was no real argument. It wasn't a real philosophical debate. It never was. Never forget that. The powers that be in college football did not give you a playoff because you demanded it. They didn't give you a playoff because it was fair. They didn't give you a playoff because in the end they were tired of, oh, the system and BCS and the computers. No, they had to figure out, how do we keep the bowl system in place? How do we keep the lucrative bowl system in place? If we can figure out a way to incorporate it that makes sense and everyone's on board. And remember, the Rose Bowl was the holdout forever and ever. Remember that? They were like, we don't know. We like January 1st, and if we're going to be involved in this, it's got to be on our terms. Well, they were getting a little bit of heat from the other bowl games until they finally went, no, this could be very lucrative for all of us, including you. Let's sit down and figure out a path to this that'll make them come roaring in terms of purchasing. And now these ESPN numbers are like $7.8 billion for this thing. And it's just, it was always that way. It was always going to be that way once they figured it out. And I kind of like the 5+7 model. I do. I think that if you are a fan of a team in the Big Ten, Big 12, I think the idea of maybe we could win this and get in, if you're kind of having one of those seasons where you're like, okay, maybe we're not as good as the number one team in our division, but we are number two, and we can get in and maybe pull off an upset and get in. But it makes a lot of sense, because what you're not going to have anymore in the conferences is you're not going to have let's say in the old days in the SEC, just for example, you're not going to have, let's say, a 12-0 Alabama team taking on an 9-3 Tennessee team, where Tennessee doesn't have any shot of getting in, but they won the East, right? They were good enough to win the East, so they were there anyway. You're not going to have those anymore. Now the conference championship games are going to be 1-2. And if you're really going to tell me that the number two team in the SEC is not worthy of some playoff or some an invite into a 12-team playoff, I challenge you to find any year where that's going to happen. The number two seed in the SEC, the number two seed in the Big Ten, the number two team in the Big 12, very, very likely with a good enough record and good enough resume to warrant a spot, even if they were to lose that conference championship game. So 5+7, I'm totally fine with it. It also gives a chance for the AAC or the Sun Belt or the Mountain West an opportunity to get in there. If the Mountain West does partner up with Washington State and Oregon State, I'd be interested to see if they get that sort of Power 5 status. I doubt it, because they're a Group 5 conference now. I don't think those two additions elevate them.
And Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, continuing along this morning. Glad you can be with us at a St. Valentine's Day. Again, so many couples will be going out tonight. My wife and I, I'm glad we've been married as long as we are, because we don't have to go out to dinner for Valentine's Day. So I was like, want to do Valentine's Day dinner on, like, I don't know, Sunday at 4? Yeah, something like that. A different day that's not today, when I'm going to go to a restaurant and wait an hour and a half for a table?
It's always ridiculous. It cracked me up. Our local grocery store that we always go to, right? You know, they're flowers. you know, they had this sign saying lowest price. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, I bought flowers from you guys. You guys are charging about $10 extra right now. What do you mean lowest price?
Exactly. Exactly. No, everything's bumped up.
Yep.
I didn't know greeting cards were like $10
now. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Greeting cards.
The price of paper's gone up.
It's amazing. My a couple of years ago, my wife, who's a big, she loves Winnie the Pooh. That's kind of her thing. And I'm in the store one time shopping for you know, Valentine's Day stuff, last minute, as I always do. And I see like a Winnie the Pooh Valentine's box of candies. And I'm like, oh, it's perfect. So I grab that. I get her a card. Then I bought her a movie that she liked. So I put it in a little basket for Valentine's Day. So she comes home. She sees the Valentine's. She's like, oh, this is great. Thank you so much. And then she reaches into a bag. She pulls out a Winnie the Pooh, the same Winnie the Pooh Valentine's Day box. And she says, I bought this for myself. And I said, why? She goes, because I didn't think you would. Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, what? She goes, I didn't think you'd see it. I go, what do you mean? I was like, where'd you buy it? She told me the store. And I go, isn't that where I get pretty much every Valentine's Day gift for you as I run there and get it? I mean, don't you know me by now? So now she had two of the boxes. But I was kind of stabbed. It was like I felt like St. Valentine having my heart ripped out and put on a platter as a holiday martyr. I was like, how dare you think I wouldn't get you that? What kind of heartless person do you think I am for St. Valentine's Day? Goodness gracious. But nevertheless, this is kind of a wild holiday, especially for those of us who do shop at the last minute. I always say I'm never going to, and I always do. I always go, no, I'm going to get my Valentine's Day card early. Stored in my office. She'll never see it. Nope, never do. Not always fair. Wait till the last minute. Run out there quickly to go grab it.
You want
to
know why?
Yeah.
Because you're a red-blooded American.
That's right. I do all the time. All the time. So I know people who travel the country who like that's like what they do. They love to like rent a car and drive to like North Dakota or Seattle, or they take long road trips. It's kind of like what they do for vacation. They just want to see things. They just want to see America. And they always say things like, yeah, some states are kind of boring, but I'm kind of glad I went there. Like, yeah, maybe Nebraska is not super exciting or Kansas is super exciting, but I'm glad I drove through it. Right. And they do it for the experience. They say, maybe I'll never go to Arkansas again, but I got to drive through Arkansas. Okay, that makes and I always say, great. You could check it off your list, something you did. Maybe you don't go vacation there, but you got to drive through, I don't know, Fayetteville or Lincoln, Nebraska or wherever.
No, there's only one reason to go to Arkansas. It's not for any of that fun stuff.
It's for
the Diamond Field.
The Diamond. Okay, very good. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, very good. I feel the same way, and this is where my NFL fandom card might get challenged by people. I feel the same way about the Combine. This is an event I really don't want to cover. If I had a chance to cover it, I would do it. But it's not on my list of things I want to do.
No, but it is amazing how it's grown. I think I think out of all the things the NFL has been pushing, the off-season things the NFL is pushing, this is the one, not only the most surprising, obviously, but it's almost like the interest in this has been the most growth
they've basically handed you workouts and said, here you go, armchair scout, here you go, watch these guys run and do drills, and what do you think of these? Yeah, exactly.
Does this guy have the stuff?
And I know people who've covered the Combine, and they've said to me, yeah, it is what you think it is. It's kind of boring. They're like, there are moments that catch your eye. There are moments where you go, yeah, but those are in between hours of repetitiveness.
But again, the NFL has done a fantastic job on televising it.
Absolutely, they
because
have.
In between, like, they'll have a guy run a 40-yard dash, and in your mind, you're thinking, like, oh, they're just doing one right after the other, quick. And no, they do one, and then, you know, they're kind of resetting everything, getting everything, make sure that everyone has the exact same parameters, so there's no cheating. And while they're doing that, while they're getting everything set up, that's when the studio analysts are talking about them.
Exactly, because
they're highlight film.
We love the draft so much, and if we can get more information on these guys leading into that, the better it is for us as fans. But again, in order to get that information, like my buddies have told me, look, every now and then you'll watch a passing drill of a quarterback, and you'll go, "Oh my God, did you see what so and so did? Look at the the throws. Look what he did there. Or you might see a 40-yard dash of a big lineman where you go, oh, what is that? Is he a zebra in disguise? What is this?
Yeah.
Like it's amazing. But he goes, in order to get those, you got to go through rep. I mean, tons of guys that are doing regular old 40-yard dashes. And then every now and then you get one that goes, this is the story of the day. Right? Same thing with every drill. There are so many guys that do the drills that you go, if I get one or two moments that I can go to the desk and say, or go on my report, or go in my live shot and say, hey, this kid was amazing. I have to sit through a ton and ton of stuff of that. But the way, you're right. This has become amazingly profitable for the NFL in terms of its rating. This gets pretty good numbers for what it is for the NFL Network. And because, again, they've taken the draft and they've turned it into such an event over the last few decades. And again, analysis, and people really do want to know. The importance of your team's growth is so valuable to fans that the process of getting that growth becomes extremely, extremely important to know. And if it means that I get to watch defensive backs do drills on a Friday afternoon in Indianapolis, so be it. Or wide receivers catching balls on a Saturday, I'll do it because my team needs wide receivers and they're in a position to get one of these three guys that are high on Mel Kiper or Todd McShay or whoever's board. I want to know what they are. I want to know what they're doing. And then we hear about the Wunderlich test and who interviewed well, who didn't interview well, all of these things. It's part of the larger process that gets us to April. I mean, it's 2 months. It's 2 full months from the end of this thing to the end of April, because this thing ends on March 3rd. This will run the 29th through March 3rd. So almost 2 months of analysis from this, plus pro days and all those workouts and all the stuff about who's trading up, who's trading down, who doesn't want their pick, who does want their pick, who do they like, who don't they like, et cetera, leading up to the biggest event the NFL has in its offseason. And I think it is the biggest event they have in the offseason, right? Even schedule day or the start of training camp or the first preseason game is not as big as round one of the draft. The round one of the draft, you and I have talked about this a number of times. Look at April. April gives you the Final Four.
Yep.
It gives you the championship game. It gives you the Masters. It gives you opening day of baseball. It gives you the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs. And then it gives you the draft at the end of the month. And I would the ratings for the first day of the draft dwarf a whole bunch of the ones I just mentioned.
You know what I'd be curious about with the first day, the opening night of the draft, day one of the draft?
Mm-hmm.
Where does it rival award shows?
Oh, in terms of like Oscars and Academy Awards? Good question. Because, like, what are their ratings compared to the others?
I mean, literally what the first day of the draft has been turned into is an award show. I mean, there's a red carpet event. Guys are wearing suits and, you know, they're being asked, who are you wearing? Like you would an award show. And then you sit there and you wait. And hopefully your name gets called up there.
I can't wait till Neil Patrick Harris is opening up the NFL draft with a little song and dance.
Yeah, he's going to.
The Bears have the number one pick. Do they go Caleb Williams or stay with Justin Fields? Just anything like that. Like so, because they're going to eventually, right?
It's gonna be emceed. In the past, the last couple of seasons or last couple of years with the draft, we've had like a sideline reporter do it, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like you're sitting there and, like, you know, they're trying to crack jokes and you're like, yeah, you know, you guys could probably go bigger.
Yeah. But instead, don't be afraid. It's. Right. They don't get me wrong. They are trying to make this as they're trying to own this as the most important non-sporting event in the country. And they're very, very close. They pretty much have it, right? No other draft matters more than this one. No other off-season event matters more than this one. And again, I admit all the time, I was totally wrong about this. I didn't think it would fail. I thought it was kind of silly to have it on a Thursday night primetime. I thought, yeah, what's wrong with the weekend? The weekend's fine. What's wrong with the way they're doing it now? Right? But they wanted to do this big spectacle. And I thought, this is still, because I'm a little old school. I just remember when it was just business. I just remember it was a bunch of guys in a room on telephones. Right? Yeah. And I'm thinking, is this really going to be a tuxedo night? What are we doing here?
In the middle of a Saturday.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, there was no fanfare for the first round.
And then next thing you know, and two things they did very well. They took it on the road And they took it. They made it a first round prime
time.
They
made it an award show.
And they made it an award show. And the combine is the precursor for all of that, which is coming up in the next week and a half. But let's be honest, it's relatively boring, but the information is kind of valuable.